Good afternoon. Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. You know, just for the few of you who have not noticed, much of the developed world is overweight. We're beginning to fight back, I think, and we'll be discussing some of the local efforts to help treat and prevent obesity in the state and in Anchorage in particular. Our guests are Carol Fink, who is the program manager of the Obesity Prevention and Control Program with the State of Alaska Division of Public Health. Also here is Cindy Norquist with the Healthy Futures Program and Katie Butler, who's a family nurse practitioner with the WOLF Program and is also going to be discussing another program called We Can. If you've got questions or comments about what you hear today or would like to give us your experiences with weight gain or weight loss, please feel free to contact us during the next 55 minutes or so. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And you can also reach us during the next hour or so by email at line1@alaskapublic.org. Welcome to each of you. It's nice to have you around.
Yes, thank you for having us.
So why do we need to have this program on obesity?
Well, here in the state of Alaska, we know that 3 out of every 10 children are overweight or obese, and there's health consequences associated with obesity, that obese kids are more likely to have trouble academically. They also have risk factors for heart disease, diabetes, and increased risk for being obese adults.
Are we the only country in the world that's suffering this problem?
We are the leaders, unfortunately, in this problem. Other countries are beginning to see their obesity prevalence increase. However, the United States is definitely exceeds any other nation.
Do any of y'all ever have problems with people kind of still denying that there is an obesity problem?
I'd say yes. I think it's just a difficult subject sometimes to bring up, even as a healthcare provider, in certain situations, and just depending on the family's openness to talking about it. There's different strategies for healthcare providers that can make it a little bit easier. And those are using, you know, certain terminology that can be less offensive, and then such as using the term weight rather than obesity or fat, obviously. And then there's also other questions, you know, that can just zero you in on families that may need extra help with motivation or different aspects that can cause weight gain.
Cindy?
Yeah, I would definitely say that my experience is kids will often identify before parents will identify that there's a problem. And so it's really important that any effort that's made is not just focused on the children, but also includes the parents.
Why do you think the children focus on it first?
Peer pressure, for one.
Yeah, that would be how I was going to answer that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times, you know, there's the television shows that they're seeing, there's peer pressure from that, but also within the schools, they're getting peer pressure, not just because somebody's bullying them with words, but because they can't keep up with the other kids during recess time. And so, because of that, they actually end up not being included.
It's hard for any individual to realize that they may have health consequences. And I think what we're finding out about health education is just telling somebody facts about things doesn't really go very far.
I agree with that. I think it just can be sometimes families just need to see it in a different light, maybe. And so in my practice, what I focus on a lot of times is talking with them about certain things that they may or may not include in their daily life, like physical activity, nutrition, and it may not be just do you do this, but what do you do, and let's talk about that and what that can lead to, kind of like certain activities that they spend a lot of time doing, like TV watching or computer time and stuff like that.
When you really look back at it, there's a tremendous difference in what we do and what we eat in now compared to the 1950s. You really got to go back and look at it. One way I think is kind of interesting, and I'm sure you guys have noticed this, you just look at a photograph of I was born in 48. You look at photographs from my time, and there is nobody. You have trouble finding anybody overweight. And then you watch TV, have trouble finding somebody who's not overweight. And I mean, it's almost gotten to the point where if you're overweight, that's normal now. Obesity is still recognized, but overweight, like I'm sitting here having lost some weight and I'm still at a BMI of 28 and people, you know, I'm so theoretically I'm overweight. I think I'll rationalize. I got big bones, big muscles, you know. Yeah, okay. But yeah, so it's, our whole frame of reference is different, especially if you grew up recently. You don't see, especially in the United States, people that are not as overweight, they're just almost normal.
Yeah, from our program's perspective, we're not looking at appearance. When we're talking about obesity, we're looking at what's going on inside the body, and we know overweight or obese kids have cardiovascular risk factors at a young age. We see them with diabetes at a young age. That's what we're concerned about. It's not appearance, and I think as a society, we need to shift and look at what's happening on the inside of those bodies and not just what is happening on the outside. And that's going to take a lot of work from everybody, the media, from parents, from healthcare providers, to address that issue and start talking about the health consequences.
I mean, so it's as simple as having a heavy frame that over time, that puts much more stress on joints. So arthritis is more common. Eating too much puts a lot more stress on an organ called the pancreas that's time to respond to that meal by pumping out insulin. And there are those of us who may have a genetic predisposition to not having that well of insulin the rest of our that's going to last, and we're stressing it much, much too hard. And so we burn out, in a sense, run out of it. And interestingly, we also are not exercising as much. Is that true?
Definitely. But, you know, Healthy Futures takes a different perspective on it.
Okay.
We don't talk so much about exercising as playing. And I think the state's campaign, the Play Every Day, .alaska.gov, did a great job on really emphasizing that you don't have to go to a gym to be physically active.
Right.
Just getting out there and playing is going to make a difference because you're being physically active.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about, somebody mentioned vitamin D earlier, and you look at, you know, how could people in Guatemala be vitamin D deficient? But when you sit down and look at what we do nowadays, there's unbelievable studies, or not, maybe they're not unbelievable, I don't want to exaggerate, but there's amazing studies that how little time we spend outdoors.
Definitely.
And
it's pretty unbelievable when I interview families and they... I would say majority spend no time, zero minutes outdoors, except for getting from a car to a building and back. And then in addition to that, if they are outside, you know, the time spent is, you know, less than an hour for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty average with the people that I work with, unfortunately. And I think there's a lot of things that go into that. I mean, lives are busier, two parents working. Single parents, lots of different reasons, but it's also like, you know, as far as Carol was mentioning with all the complications that can take effect on your body, which, you know, she mentioned some, but there's hypertension, there's high cholesterol, which is the reason that I became interested in this problem, fatty liver disease, psychosocial problems. I mean, it's pretty endless actually, as far as what the body can be affected by excess weight, but they, you know, the time spent outdoors can really change that, can really change what their body responds with. So
we, Healthy Futures recently did a pilot project at a Title I school here in Anchorage, where at recess time, we brought in positive adult role models to play with the kids. And what we did was a simple running program. You could run or walk laps with Olympians. And it was amazing because the feedback that we got from the teachers was when the kids came back in, they were much more connected with each other. They were much more willing to learn. And there were zero referrals to the principal's office during recess on the days that we were there helping the kids be physically active.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just getting outside, but it's getting outside and being active. And sometimes kids don't know how to do that.
When you say less less problems with the principal when you're outside. It made me think that recently I've been reading about some information about the disadvantages of just sitting, getting to, again, the changes in our environment in the last, 50 years. It's a very rapid change in how we do things, and we used to be moving all the time, and now a very large percentage of us don't move, and when we don't move, lots of things start happening. We were not evolved to sit and watch TV and sit in a classroom, and so there's plenty of studies. Well, again, there are several studies, and in one state that I know of that requires kids to get up and move around to help their education, actually increases or decreases the problems with attention deficit disorder by having school kids move around. And then the other study I just read is if you get up every 20 minutes, it's very helpful just to get up and move around. If you're not, then there's just deleterious effects on cholesterol metabolism and glucose and so forth, just sitting. So it is. It's just a huge change in our environment, and we haven't even talked about the food availability issue. Mm-hmm. Y'all heard the same thing about the exercise? I thought that may be what you were implying, Cindy.
Definitely. I mean, you know, we're born to move, yeah. And when kids are physically active, they do better academically and socially in schools.
Let me remind listeners again, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our topics today are some local efforts to try to control and prevent childhood obesity and adult obesity and being overweight. My guests are Carol Fink of the State of Alaska, Cindy Norquist of Healthy Futures Program, and Katie Butler of the WOLF and the We Can programs. Later in the program, after we go through some of the basics here, we're going to hear more about each of these programs, but we're also interested in hearing about your experiences with weight loss or weight gain and how you might address these issues. If you're interested, you can contact us in Anchorage at 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. And let me remind you also, at any time, you can go to alaskapublic.org and look for the Line 1 link and listen to these programs later. You don't have to listen to them at this point. You can listen to them later tonight if you want to. But the only time we're available to answer questions would be in the next 45 minutes or so. Are there easy answers to why most of Western countries, many Western countries, have gotten into this problem?
There are no easy answers. It's really, multifactorial, all these elements that are working against society. We used to have a lot more physical activity just through our activities of daily living that we don't have anymore. People aren't walking to work as much anymore, using public transit. They don't mow their own lawns. They might not clean their own houses. And then they don't get out and play every day. And some of that has happened because our societies have been created in a way that it's hard to access recreational areas or be physically active in places that might not be safe for families. So at the State of Alaska, we're really trying to address some of those system and environmental issues that are decreasing access to physical activity. And we talk more about physical activity than exercise. We really want people to get active. And for kids, the recommendation is 60 minutes of physical activity every day. And for adults, the recommendation is 150 minutes of physical activity each week. And so adults can go 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, or, three times a week, 50 minutes. But for kids, we want them to get out and play every day for 60 minutes for good health.
Other thoughts on why Western societies, and I say Western societies because although I agree with what you said at the beginning, Carol, is that we kind of led the way, but many, many countries now are catching up with us. In Indonesia, China, it seems like the more the society is, the wealthier is, the more we've brought this issue upon us. So are there other issues that are causing? I like to think about it, it is less activity. I'll try to quit using the word exercise. I agree with you on that it doesn't have to be exercise, but I'm already pre-wired to think about that, but it is just any activity and just not sitting. And then food has become much more plentiful. Despite the fact that the world's population is exponentially rising, we've figured out ways to feed a large percentage, but unfortunately not all. And so certain foods have become much less expensive.
Mm-hmm. And I'd just like to point out that marketing, food marketing, is playing a big role in that, because every single day there are advertisements for kids for sugar drinks and junk food. And that's predominantly what kids see when they're watching TV programming, and now with how kids access the internet. And it's encouraging kids and families to eat at any time of the day, all day long, and to make poor food choices. So when parents are struggling and saying, oh, it's really hard to get my kid to eat well, they've got to realize that they have a lot of forces working against them every time their kid is watching TV or seeing some kind of screen, that these kids are getting marketed to. And so parents, I think as a society, that's something that we should be addressing, and looking at how we market foods and sugar beverages to our kids, so that parents actually have a chance to feed their kids and make healthy choices for their their kids and families.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments about things that are driving this? I think the marketing is a very good example.
I think the main thing that I hear from families is busy lives, and they just kind of cut, unfortunately, the activity out first, and then comes, you know, the healthy food, because they feel like they don't have the time to prepare it. So we work at Alaska Children's Heart Center, the WOLF program, trying to give them tools to, you know, to make those, to plan ahead a little bit, make better choices as far as being able to prepare easy meals. It doesn't have to be fancy every single night. It doesn't have to be, it just kind of has to have the right parts and be the right size, you know, of meal and portions. And I think what Carol mentioned as far as, you know, parents being, you know, they feel like there is a lot against them, you know, in society. And I think they need to be given that support, you know, from other people, from us, from their friends and family, you know, to say, it's okay to say no to your kid. A lot of times it's okay to say, no, you can't have that drink. No, you can't have that fast food today. And be okay with it. And, you know, once parents do that and say that no, and, you know, and or you even get the kid to buy into doing that, they feel so good about it. And the child wants to please their parents most of the time, and they really do. They make the change and they get over it. they're okay with it. Pretty short.
You know, this is kind of controversial to say, but I also think that school lunches and school breakfasts have a negative influence on what our kids are eating. I was a very strict parent about what my kids ate, and also what my kids watched. So they didn't realize that there were cereals out there that had all these bright colors until they started school. Mm-hmm. And they saw some of the kids mm-hmm. eating breakfast at school, mm-hmm. and they were like, wow, those are pink and green and, you know, all these natural colors that shouldn't be.
They sure are sweet.
Yeah. And so, good. You know, I think we have to make a change even mm-hmm. in the schools, and right. we have to, you know, stop the politics, and let's be honest about what the kids really are eating, and not allow marketing groups to tell us that, you know, a teaspoon of ketchup is a vegetable. Mm-hmm. Or is it a tablespoon?
Neither.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we got an email. This is a woman who just moved to Alaska, says she works out regularly, recently went to a doctor and found out that she'd gained 10 pounds. I'm not sure over what period of time. The doctor told her that most people gain 10 to 15 pounds when they move to Alaska and then never lose it. What are your comments? It's kind of like being a freshman in college, I guess, right?
I definitely think that there's a challenge with, you know, when you move from a different place, if there's not winter there, especially. I mean, I don't know if this woman is addressing that, but the families I meet, especially from different cultures that are very different environments, beach living, you know, those types of things where you are outside a great deal and then you move here. It's so important to find that thing that you like in the winter, that you can be outside. And some of it takes gear and some of it doesn't. But there are lots of programs and things if you do have a need for gear or for different introductions to activities in the winter. Alaska is such an amazing place to see in the winter, I think. And I really, in my program also, we try to just get those kids to see that and get excited about it, because they'll be just as excited to play in the snow than they are at the beach or in the sand. Or
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate there's a provider out there giving advice like that, because not everybody moves to Alaska and gains 10 or 15 pounds and doesn't lose it. And I think the provider really should offer options and ideas about how to address the issue and find out if it's nutrition or physical activity, and then send that person to someone that can help them make a choice. And because those 10 pounds are going to increase the risk for health conditions.
Yeah, we don't know if they didn't give advice. Yeah. What we know is what the person was told, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily true more here than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Where does Alaska stand nationally ranked versus everybody else, particularly in kids?
Well, the monitoring systems aren't directly comparable. Nationally, we are as overweight and as obese as most of the other states. There's a few states with lower prevalence. Mm-hmm. However, you know, they're all high when you're thinking that 3 out of 10 kids are overweight or obese. There's a lot of kids in the state.
So how do you gain weight and how do you lose weight? What I'm trying to get at with this question is, what are the fundamental equations or thought process that we need to make sure everybody has heard, whether they want to believe it or not? That's okay. But what seems to be the best evidence?
Well, if I was to recommend two things that people should do to maintain a healthy weight or to lose weight, physical activity is the number one. It's the closest thing we have to a silver bullet to have a healthy weight. And then the second thing that I would recommend is no sugared drinks. And I personally include juice in that we don't need to be getting calories from sugar, whether it be a natural, quote, sugar from a juice or from a sugared drink.
Mm-hmm. Katie?
Those would be the top recommendations I would give also. But I would add, you know, if you're adding, is, you know, regular meals. I think a lot of families tend to not have meal times, and so they end up kind of snacking the entire day or not really having any time where the child or the family members are hungry at dinner time, even though there might even be a family that's creating a great meal, and then the child or the family's not hungry at that time because they've eaten snacks the entire day. They've come home from school. They don't have those planned snack and meal times, and I think that's one thing that can be really helpful as well.
What I was trying to get you guys to say or and comment on.
I was going to add to that. As far as I think what you're getting at is energy in versus energy out.
Yeah.
Okay. An equation.
back to the basics. I mean,
right.
I mean, the only way we can gain weight is take in more energy than we burn off.
Right.
The only way we can lose weight is to take in less energy or burn up more energy.
Right.
So that equation has got to work. It just has to work. And there's corollaries of that. If you're overweight and your energy balance is bad, you're not going to lose any weight. So people can get discouraged about that. And then sometimes people don't think they're putting in as many calories or not moving as much as they think. Because all of us have faced people who say, I eat like a bird. But that equation always works. It's almost never a metabolic problem.
Right. That's correct.
That true?
Yes. All the children
You're the
I
other,
see.
Other medically oriented
right.
person.
When I see a lot of the families, in fact, I'm working with the subspecialists at Providence Hospital, you know, the endocrinologists and such. And so all the kids that I see, many of them don't even have to go to him, you know, until we're able to work together to try to do some lifestyle changes with the family, because almost every time it is not related to an endocrine problem. It's just that intake versus energy burned. So,
and I may be wrong about this. I'm getting into areas where I don't want to overset myself, but most endocrine problems, you're overweight and short. Most heavy people are overweight and big and tall. But most of the time, if you've got a serious problem, especially in childhood, it affects growth deleteriously, whereas being over calories, you end up a little bit bigger.
Right. The only other thing I would add to that as far as medical problems is the bigger kids can get the early puberty signs.
Absolutely.
Very, very young, age 6 even. And so those can be things that can actually be detrimental long term. Yeah.
I came into a comment into a program not too long ago that everybody's worried that it's what we're eating that is making girls go into puberty earlier, when it turns out it's probably our being overweight that is the driving factor. It's not necessarily what's in the foods that we eat.
That's what I've gotten from the literature as well. So.
So in Western countries, we've gotten less active, and we've had greater access to food, and we've had much more marketing, as you've said, to it. And we have an email that says, don't forget to talk about city planning. Should we talk about city planning, Cindy? Cindy jumped off her chair. Okay. So.
Yes, this is a pet peeve of mine. I drive down O'Malley Road every day, and there's a school there, and I see lines of cars going in and out. And, you know, it's great. We can pretend that we want kids to walk to school, but if we're not building sidewalks on these main roads where there are speed limits of 55 miles per hour, we cannot expect families to walk to school. I mean, it's the bottom line. So I think city planning is key to us getting families more physically active.
I have it's not a funny story, but it's a story to add to that as far as snow removal goes, which is city oriented as well. But my friend's children know when a car's coming fast and they don't have time to or they see a car coming and it's a little close, just jump into the snowbank because there's nowhere to walk. So they have to walk in the street. And so when cars come, just jump in the snowbank because that's the answer that she has for safety.
Yeah.
But that's all they can do. If they're going to walk to school or walk to even their bus stop, then they don't have a lot of options sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and that comes back to being able to do your daily activities. Can you walk to the grocery store? Can you walk to a medical appointment? Do you have access to a local park that is safe for you and your family to go to? Those are what are driven by city planning. And the CDC has piles of literature that show that people who live in walkable communities, you can score a community on their walkability. Like, can you walk to school? Can you walk to the grocery store? Can you walk to those additional places? Neighborhoods that score high on a walkability scale have lower prevalence of obesity. And so there seems to be a correlation between how you design your community and the weight of the population in that community. And it is an important component of changing the society and the system that we're in right now to address obesity.
All right. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection in Anchorage. You can call us at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll continue to take calls and emails as we discuss local efforts to help treat and prevent obesity with Carol Fink of the State of Alaska, Cindy Norquist of the Healthy Futures Program, and Katie Butler of the Wolf and We Can programs. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard, and our discussion today is revolving around efforts to treat and prevent obesity. My guest is Carol Fink of the Obesity Prevention and Control Program of the State of Alaska's Division of Public Health, Cindy Norquist of Healthy Futures, and Katie Butler, a family nurse practitioner who is involved in the Wolf and We Can programs. You can email questions and comments to us over the next 30 minutes at line1@alaskapublic.org. Our local phone number, 550-8433, and our outside line, toll-free line, is 1-888-353-5752. And let me remind everybody, you can also listen tonight as the program re-airs between 7 and 8, but you won't be able to call in and ask any questions or send us any emails at that time. So what do we know evidence-wise that works to help people lose some weight? What I think is happening is we've now begun nationally, authorities have pointed out we have a problem and we're beginning to understand why the problem occurred, and now we're trying to find evidence that, of programs that work. So what are we learning? What do we know?
In the literature, basically, physical activity and nutritional changes cause weight loss over a short time, definitely. The struggle is the long term, and I think that's where there's not a lot of literature for long term, just because it hasn't been a problem for many, many years, as far as childhood obesity. But those are our best bets. And then, as Carol talked about, it's definitely not that simple because it's so multifactorial, as far as, you know, the community that you live in, the, you know, medical problems that you may have starting out, those types of things.
I would say, you know, Carol brought up the subject about drinks, and I think accountability by writing down what you're actually eating and drinking is huge, because it's a major eye-opener at how many hidden calories there are in, you know, a chai tea or, you know, any type of drink. And all of a sudden you realize that you've just had 1,500 calories in drinks alone in one day.
Yeah, you only get 22,000 allotted to you, right?
That's right.
The double mocha, suddenly it's not so interesting.
I mean, there's kind of two parts to the question. There's what can an individual do to lose weight, and then there's what can we do at a population level to have a community that has a healthy weight. And there are some proven strategies at the community level that will work. One is having quality PE in all our schools for our kids. There's also the person who brought up how we design our communities as a proven strategy to people having access to, you know, being bike friendly and walkable communities. Those are all like population based approaches that can change our community's obesity prevalence. At the individual level, it is you need to be working with a professional who can look at your diet and look at your physical activity and the influences in your life to really come up with an individual plan. So,
are there ideas that don't seem to work, that we have pretty good evidence are not successful?
I think the fad diets.
Why do you say that?
Well, I know, you know, I am not a medical practitioner, but I do know. I come from a family that's obese, and every time they went on a fad diet, whether it was the cabbage soup diet or any other, everything came back plus more, and it's demoralizing.
Yeah. In fact, to be honest, most attempts at diet, you may have some success, but long-term successful diets are not particularly plentiful. So are there characteristics of people who are successful at losing weight?
I think it definitely takes motivation. I mean, the person has to be ready. It's almost comparable to smoking cessation or those types of strategies. If the person comes to a health professional looking for help and they're ready and they want to make a change and they're given the tools and they came up with the meetable goals that they want to start with, I think they can be very successful, and I've seen it. However, if they're not ready and somebody's telling them to be there, they're going through the motions, but their head's not in it, I don't think that they're going to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, that's what smoking cessation programs are successful. If you call in, like, some of these no smoking hotlines and stuff, the first thing they do is try to figure out where you are on this attempt. How many attempts have you made? How successful you are? How serious are you? So it's the same thing with this. You have to decide you want to do it.
Right. And I ask my patients that, where they are on a willingness and confidence level, and it's just kind of just to see where they're at, and also see how it may wax and wane a little bit when things get a little bit tougher, when they're, you know, making some changes and they've been successful.
And then the bottom line is the idea is, if you think it's going to be a fad diet because you're on a high fat, low fat, no carb, good carb diet. There's always this initial, if you stick with it, weight loss, which is water weight. You lose some weight pretty quickly. And everybody thinks there's the greatest thing in the world. And 2 weeks later, you haven't lost much more. Incidentally, one of the other things I wanted to try to get at, and I hope you guys don't get upset at me, is this. It's 1 pound of weight loss or gain is about 3,500 calories. And that is international universal physics. You have 3,500 calorie gain one way or the other. Eating more or exercising less, you're going to gain a pound and vice versa. And you can't do it any faster. You can lose water weight a little bit quick, but then the real life comes in. And we all have different caloric needs. Heavier people like me fight gravity a little bit more, so I burn up more calories walking than my wife does, for example. Is that fair to say that, the 3,500 calorie?
I think that's definitely true. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit harder with kids, I think, as mm-hmm. far as weight loss goes, because of their metabolic changes and just pubertal changes and mm-hmm. growth that's happening. So there are rates of gain that I look at a little more closer. But it basically sums it up. I mean, still, if you're able to cut out one sugar drink, if you have two and you cut out one over a year, you'll probably lose about, 25 to 50 pounds, depending on how many calories is in that one drink. So,
and you don't make up for it with some other.
Correct. Income. If you don't make up for it.
Diane, thanks for hanging on. What can we do for you?
I want to continue with the idea about city planning, but also there are ethnic groups here who are from warm climates, and I don't think anyone is teaching them where they can get low cost winter clothes. I see them at the grocery store always having to, be taken, never riding the bus, never walking, because they're in sandals in the middle of the winter. And personally, I always went to garage sales in Value Village and stocked up on little Sorel boots and snowsuits for the next year. And it doesn't cost that much, but I don't think that anyone helps some of the people from warm climates who may not speak English, who may not really be part of the mainstream activities, how they can get out and why their kids should participate in something as simple and low cost as, say, the Nordic Sea Club's Junior Nordic program, which gets back to city planning again. We have only so many parks and trails. The trails have all been built by volunteers, except the coastal trail, and yet Junior Nordic is maxed out in certain of these places and cannot accept more kids. And this administration is not allowing more parkland to come in, even though sometimes it's free. And it's really a shame. And right now we have before us something that is terribly boring, but is germane to what we're talking about, and that's Title 21, our land use code. And I wish that everyone realized that it does affect us. And I wish we could get them out and to the assembly when we have the hearings in August or September, saying we want a walkable city.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any comments on Diane's thoughts?
I'd like to make a couple comments. If a family does have children in a school, there are programs within the schools to get clothing to the kids. So there are ways to get information to families if they have children. As far as Junior Nordic, it's an amazing program. I love it. My kids are involved in it. It's low cost, and they make it so that it's affordable by renting the equipment. However, not everybody has the transportation mode to get to the locations, and that's where there's a struggle. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it does go back to city planning not only being walkable, but also having buses that are reliable and that families feel safe in.
That's right.
All right. Diane, thanks for your comments. I want to kind of move on so we introduce these programs. Appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.
All right. Sandy, tell us a little bit about Healthy Futures.
All right. Well, Healthy Futures is a grassroots Alaskan-grown program. It was started by the late Bonnie Sosa and her husband, Sam Young, and they wanted a program that would basically get kids physically active. We're not research-based. We're not a lobbying power, although we do advocacy. Our focus is really on empowering kids to build the habit of daily physical activity into their lives. And we do this by making community events fun. Our focus is not on the first child that crosses the finish line, but the last. We want them to feel like they were a winner so that they keep coming back.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, we give kids incentives for being physically active. Kids don't recognize the intrinsic value of physical activity. So instead, during the school year, we have a Healthy Futures log where kids document their physical activity, turn it in after 4 weeks, and they get little incentives. And probably one of the most popular incentives this year was a digital jump rope. So you could actually see how many calories you were burning and count how many jumps you made. And, you know, so the whole focus is really on empowering the kids so that they have the ability to be physically active throughout the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Is part of the idea is if you hit kids early, show them good role models early, that it may change their activity levels throughout the rest of their life?
Absolutely. Our focus is actually on kindergarten through sixth grade, mm-hmm. although we never turn any child away.
Mm-hmm.
Because our thoughts are if we can get the kids active so that they instill that value as a value, then they will continue it. But anecdotally, what we found is kids will often lead parents into a more physically active lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
When kids are, when they receive the activity logs at schools and maybe a grade is attached to them in their PE class, they'll come home and say, look, Mom, look, Dad, we've got to go for a walk. I need to get this in. I need to document it because, one, they want the prize, but also it's expected of them.
How do people get in touch with the Healthy Futures program if this sounds interesting to them?
Well, there's one of two ways. Our website, which is www.healthyfuturesak.org. We're also on Facebook, Healthy Futures AK. And then during the school year, they can talk to their PE teachers or health specialists about becoming involved in the Healthy Futures Challenge, which is offered during the fall and during the spring. And in addition to the incentives that kids get, schools can earn money for the highest participation so that they can use the money to buy equipment, PE equipment specifically.
Okay. Katie, you want to tell us a little bit about your programs?
Sure. I'm at Alaska Children's Heart Center, and it's the WOLF stands for Working on Lifetime Fitness. And basically, our mission there is to empower families with the knowledge and support to help make healthy choices in food and fitness. But the hope is hopefully to have them last a lifetime. So the earlier, the better for the kids that I work with. We have volunteer events that occur every other week. We have a fitness night, and that's with Frontier Therapy Services. The physical therapist there volunteer with me, and we do circuit training or outside play or all kinds of different things to introduce them to activities that are somewhat working out like but need minimal or no equipment, so that they can do those activities at home, and they're given all of the activities that we do, so that they can reference those. And then we also do a support group for the families, provide education, and where they are able to meet as a group and share stories and share struggles and stuff like that. I work with the subspecialists in Providence, you know, to deal with their other comorbid conditions that might be happening. And then we have program phases that they move through. So the first being let's get moving, and then looking more closely at what they're eating, how they're doing as far as if the changes that they're making make changes on their blood pressure and cholesterol and those medical problems that we see when we first meet. And then them actually leading a physical activity event that we all go to and the other WOLF participants go to, and then also them providing the actual patient, providing education to the other kids, whatever they feel like is the main thing that they took from the program. So,
and how do people get in touch with that program?
They can call Alaska Children's Heart Center, and it's 907-565-2242. We do have a website. It's www.alaskachildheart.com, And, yeah, those are the two best ways.
And I'd also mention that if you go to alaskapublic.org, line one, and go to this program, we have links to these programs directly that have already been mentioned, plus a number of other educational sites that I think are reliable, including the Mayo Clinic, and then the recent public TV's, the HBO series, it wasn't public TV, called Weight of the Nation, which had a number of specialists over a multi-night program, looking at the issues that we're trying to handle in an hour. And they have some really well-respected experts if you want to get more information, all that, as well as some National Institutes of Health programs. What about the We Can program?
And the We Can program is a partnership that I've worked with Dr. Woodard on, the Alaska Center for Pediatrics, and we do. It stands for Ways to Enhance Children's Activity and Nutrition, and that's a community outreach program that we basically go into a school and host a four-week series of education and physical activity for families. And they it's really neat to see the families come. They eat together. There's a meal that's, you know, in a portion size and, you know, of appropriate, and everybody enjoys it every time. And then we also do group-based education and activity, so the children and families are divided by age, and so they're with their peers, and they're able to learn from one another. It's a really positive environment, and I've seen all the families that I've seen be involved have really taken away something from it, so... Mm-hmm.
Again, at alaskapublic.org, there's two links to that. The National Institutes of Health has a link that talks about this. And then there's a video of a program that We Can has done locally at Inland School, Inlet View School. There's now been a couple of schools involved in this particular program. So there's a number of ways that individuals can get to some of these programs. Carol, are there other programs we should mention, perhaps, that we are not have representatives from today?
Not that I can think of at
okay.
the moment.
All right, so there's probably other ones out there, and we apologize that we're slighting you at all, but we really appreciate everybody's efforts. Let me go ahead and take another caller. Pete, you've been waiting for a while. What can we do for you?
All right, Dr. Woodard, thanks a million for hosting this and for continuing to emphasize this, and thanks to your panelists also for their advocacy. I've got 4 points. I'll try and be brief. I'm sitting in the middle of a thunderstorm and well, it's still late now. I served on the mayor's task force on obesity, which was an award-winning program, and emphasized over 10 years a progressive pathway to reduction of obesity in the community, including the built environment, nutrition, and physical activity, physical inactivity. Unfortunately, this current mayoral administration has chosen to completely ignore the recommendation. Thanks to Carol Como and the school board for proceeding with, as we know, significantly improving the nutritional status and circumstances in the schools, and also for doing their darndest to improve the number of minutes in the elementary grades. They're now up to 3 30-minute periods weekly, which is far from optimal. Of course, we the CDC recommends 60 minutes daily, 7 days a week, as one of your panelists has noted. The second thing is, as someone has also noted, that 12 years ago, thousands of man hours went into creating the Comprehensive Plan Anchorage 2020. Which created this fabulous vision for a healthy, livable community. Unfortunately, the current Title 21 planning and zoning process has almost completely disemboweled all of those recommendations. The recommendations for bikeability, walkability, transit, those things which your panelists have mentioned, are almost completely off the board, and I would recommend that your listeners become involved, because this is critical today. The third thing is that, as I learned many, many years ago in training, is that fitness alone is not necessarily an indicator of health. We used to talk about the fat thins, those who were very thin, but who in fact had significant intra-abdominal fat, which of course placed them at significant health risks. just as someone who is obese. And finally, I would say that the cliche that there is no health without fitness is absolutely accurate. In fact, we know that there are those who are overweight or even obese, but are fit and subsequently are at much less risk than some who may be unfit, but in fact are thin. And I would conclude, and pardon my rant, by saying that, of course, the current state of obesity with the metabolic syndrome and syndrome X, everything which it encompasses, may in fact jeopardize our entire national economy if we continue at the current pace. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Pete, thanks for your comments. We very much appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd just like to follow up. We do know that there is a huge economic toll due to obesity and healthcare costs. It is what's driving and fueling diabetes and heart disease and other chronic disease, which are very expensive to treat. And in the state of Alaska, each year we're spending $459 million that are attributable to obesity. And, you know, over a quarter of that is coming from public dollars through our Medicaid and Medicare funds. So it has economic consequences. So when people think it's an individual responsibility or issue, it's not. Society is paying for this, and society is impacted by the prevalence of obesity.
Yeah, it's an important issue. We spend more money on healthcare than any other country by far in the world, and yet our healthcare indicators are decreasing, showing that it's not how much money you spend on health issues that is most important. Thanks for your comments, Pete. Brian, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi. Being an engineering type at heart, I understand the calorie equation and agree with it. Is there any correlation between GMO foods and our perception of appetite, or do new strains of wheat, for instance, need to be consumed in higher quantities in order to give us the same sense of fullness?
Okay, so genetically modified foods, any impact? Anybody have any comments?
I don't really have any expertise in that area.
Wrong crowd.
Okay. Thanks for the comment.
All right, Brian, thanks very much. I guess I would say, this genetically modified foods has been an issue we've addressed on this program before, and we have to realize that just about everything we eat has been genetically modified over the history. The wheat we eat today, and even the most organic wheat, is very much changed from what was present 1,000 years ago. So everything's genetically modified, and people are out there trying to make sure it's healthy, and I'm not aware of caloric dense. Well, that's not true. There are some much more calorically dense rices and so forth because of the need to feed an ever-burgeoning population, that some of the genetically modified foods have increased, I think, caloric density in some of these foods. We're in the last 5 minutes or so. Michael, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi, Doctor. I want to echo Pete's thanks for the program and your guests. Real quickly, someone mentioned the availability of clothing for newcomers. There's a place on Old Seward called Clothing by the Pound. It's got some good folks over there. It might be real helpful.
Okay. All right, good. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye now.
Appreciate it. All right, so we're getting towards the end of the program. I always like to kind of sum up again last couple of minutes. What are the important things that we need to make sure people are hearing from the program today? Katie, we're going to start over here with you.
I think all of us have similar recommendations that we would give, but I think the sugar drinks, that's the number one as far as weight gain goes, and we just don't really need them. And so if a family is trying to make a small change and they want to do something, that's the first thing that I would recommend for them to try, is to just limit them or make them zero.
Yeah, I mean, this is Carol, and looking at the population-based approach that we take in public health, really what we need is people in society to recognize that obesity is an issue and that it is a public issue, and that we all can play a role. So healthcare providers, our decision makers, our school folks, families, our coaches, our PE teachers, our health teachers, all can play a role in decreasing the prevalence of obesity. But we're going to need some leadership in that area to go to the next step and put resources into programs and approaches that we know work. And so I would just ask listeners to think about how obesity is impacting our society and what we can do about it collectively to make a difference.
Cindy?
To tag on to what Carol was saying, I think it's really important for parents to really pay attention to what's going on in the schools. Right now we're facing budget cuts here in Anchorage. I'd hate to see us eliminate PE. I know that's something that's been on the radar up in Fairbanks, and so I think it's really important to stay involved with the schools so you know what's actually happening with the kids. The other thing is don't let cost be a barrier to being physically active. If it's a community event that you want to participate in and it's one that's supported by Healthy Futures, we have scholarships. We'll pay your entrance fee. It's a very seamless process. And, you know, just take that first step. It can be as simple as going for a walk.
Okay. I started the program by saying, you know, first you have to recognize you have a problem, then you've got to figure out a way to do something about it. And as Katie's implied, then there's got to be some motivation. Are we beginning to make some headway, do you think?
We really haven't seen obesity prevalence rates drop. We have seen some stagnation for childhood obesity. Kids weight 3 to 5 years ago, the prevalence is about the same as it is now, and we're considering that a success. However, you know, with the plateau in childhood obesity, that's great, but we really want to see the decline in childhood obesity. However, with adults, we're still seeing about a 1% increase in prevalence every single year, and 2/3 of Alaskan adults today are either overweight or obese.
I can just add that to children and families that have participated in the We Can program and the WOLF program especially, some of their outcomes have been really incredible. Mm-hmm. As far as with children, it's not as much weight loss. It may be just stabilization of their weight, but the entire family's activity increasing, and then measurements of their waist and, you know, tricep skin folds dropping fairly dramatically, you know, in a year's time. Mm-hmm. So I think they do, you know, the families that do have all the motivation and then, you know, take the programs that are available to them, Healthy Futures, the We Can program, the WOLF program, and, you know, even the events that are free at the WOLF program, just to participate in those, just to get introduced to different activities, they can be successful, and I've seen that for sure.
I was even got a comment that on my way over here, I heard Michelle Obama being interviewed about a new book she's written called American Grown, which is the story of the White House garden. And she was talking about she and her husband, the president, decided that they needed to do more about their own children's weight and are changing from processed foods to unprocessed foods and making sure people, or their kids at least, remember what real apples and real squash and real corn taste like. Thanks very much to Carol Fink, Cindy Norquist, and Katie Butler for joining us today. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I did. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to continue with the conversation, you can join us on join KSK on Facebook. You find the links also on our website, alaskapublic.org. And why don't you join us next Monday afternoon when my guest will be Ted Epperly. Ted has written a book called Fractured, The America's Broken Healthcare System and What We Must Do to Heal It. We've talked about a number of the issues that he addresses in the book, but he comes up with some concrete answers to how we may get a handle on our runaway healthcare costs. We'll be here Monday, June 25th from 2 to 3 p.m., repeating the same evening at 7 p.m. on FM 91.1. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and our audio engineer. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.